If at the intake call center, at the time of first notice of loss, a good actor is actually calling for help, why are you turning them into a flame number and hanging up the phone on them?
Welcome to the Insurance Innovators Unscripted, the show dedicated to innovation in the insurance industry. Each episode, you'll get a dose of thought leadership from the industry's top business minds, influencers, innovators, and executive leaders. If you want to transform your corner of the industry and exchange innovative ideas, you need to subscribe to this podcast. Now here's your host, Abel Travis.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Insurance Innovators Unscripted podcast, where we dedicate our discussion to insurance innovation. So of course, the holidays are coming up. There's Christmas and New Year that's going to be coming up over the next 2 weeks. So just to let you know, we are going to have repeat episodes of the podcast for the next couple of weeks. You know, this one, of course, is a new one, and the guest that's coming on the podcast and on the show is a great one. You know, it's Louis Siskin from Drop-In, and I think you're really going to enjoy the story that he has to tell. So, you know, of course, before we jump in, I want to recognize the sponsor of this episode of the podcast, and that's Vortex Legal.
Innovation in the insurance field is exciting, and Vortex Legal is a unique and proven solution to help improve a company's loss ratio by substantially reducing legal expenses. Their nationwide network of local attorneys attend the voluminous and routine and predictable hearings for a flat rate, not an hourly rate. So Vortex Legal's solution works with both staff counsel offices as well as outside law firms. They've saved many carriers millions of dollars. So if you want to learn more, just contact Jonathan Broder at 954-473-2648 or visit vortexlegal.com.
So today I'm speaking with Louis Siskin, the Chief Executive Officer of Drop-In. Now, Drop-In is an on-demand live video platform designed for use of the P&C organizations, MGAs, as well as third-party adjusters and also managed repair networks. Now, Drop-In also enables a better underwriting process as well as speed to claim time and enhances estimate accuracy. You know, Louis, it really is a pleasure to have you on this podcast. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate it. Looking forward to it for a week now.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to talking to you. So, you know, just interestingly enough, I heard a lot about your history. So before we get into Drop-In, you know, I'd love for you to tell us, tell me a little bit about yourself and just tell the audience about where you came from prior to starting this organization.
Well, I was born and raised in Los Angeles and grew up here. I was a mentally gifted minor, but I was also a problem child. And, you know, I mean, it's the same story all across America. There's a kid with potential who's making a mess. And my mess got bigger than most. I ended up in federal prison for 12 years for drug trafficking. That was a really, really, really revelatory experience for me, because that was where I realized that, you know, I wasn't a good person who did bad things once in a while. I was a bad person who did good things once in a while. And once I was able to have that moment of self-awareness, it really brought me back to refocus and decide that I wanted to be exactly the opposite for the rest of my life. I want to be a good person who hopefully doesn't do anything bad, but rather than what I was before. And, you know, it was a long process, and 12 years is a long time. But I think that I came out of it better for it, and I'm able to share that with people, and sometimes I can have a positive effect.
Yeah, that's really interesting. You know, I heard that part of your story, and you know, as I heard that, you know, I could just imagine that that's really what shaped your view to build and provide some of the services that you have done, especially the capability that you created with Drop-In. So, you know, if you don't mind, Louis, you know, just talk to me about specifically what Drop-In is and how it enables the insurance value chain.
Yeah, well, Drop-In is, like you said at the introduction, it's a live video collaboration platform. It allows carriers to use in-house assets or external assets, TPAs, MGAs, underwriting, and basically we've designed a process now with Lloyd's, who we're working with in the United Kingdom. We're in the middle of designing a process where Drop-In can be used without having to retrain or redo any of the in-house processes, so that the data that Drop-In collects is just available at every step of the value chain from the first time the adjuster contacts the customer after intake. They have pictures and video, for example, before they even talk to the customer. It raises a higher level of engagement, all the way up to litigation. If there's an unfortunate situation where there's litigation over maybe leakage or padding of a claim, what legal team wouldn't want pictures and video as close to the incident as possible? So that's the idea of it. And we do it both from drones and camera phones. And I'm really happy to announce for the first time today on your show that Drop-In is now no longer connectivity dependent.
I want to talk about that, right? But first, let's skip back to the beginning. So I remember when I first learned about Drop-In, you know, I knew about the capabilities around drones first. It seems as if over time you all have evolved, of course, from the capability around drones through to mobile and to the point that you just made now, you know, being a sort of a connectivity agnostic, right? So over time, you know, what drove the growth amongst the different platforms? And then, you know, just talk a little bit more about being connectivity agnostic, right? And the value that organizations are going to get from that.
Yeah, well, you know, originally the idea for Drop-In was to be a media company of sorts. My idea was is that people would have Drop-In on their phone, and maybe they had a drone or maybe they just had a camera phone. It didn't matter to me. And if somebody needed to see something live, they could open their app, and just like ordering any other crowdsourced app, instead of ordering food or a ride, they could order, you know, an inspection. Hey, I want you to go to this address and live stream for me. I want to see anything, whether it's for a title search, for anytime Google Street Maps wouldn't do legally. You know, I mean, there was all kinds of crazy ideas. But we didn't have $20 million to create market awareness. And I'm not even sure now, with everything that I've learned, that had we had it, that would have been the right place to spend it. So we pivoted into insurance, which was, you know, I mean, it's filled with a bunch of great people, but it was a mistake for me personally because of my background. Not only is there a tremendous sales cycle commitment, there is, you know, these are liability averse companies. I mean, why would they want to deal with, you know, a convict, to put it quite bluntly? And so it took us a lot longer to have our first breakthroughs and our first customers. And I think a lot of that went with, I mean, quite frankly, people have told me, hey, in the beginning, it was a joke. There's a convict with a tech company, and a year went by, and then people heard that you got off parole, and then people heard that you talked to kids, and then people heard that you, you know, have got a letter from your judge saying he wished more people who came through his court turned their life around, and all these kinds of things happened in just over a couple years. And then, you know, things just turned around, and we're able to, you know, be a part of the Lloyd's Network environment right now. We're part of the Lloyd's Lab, and we, you know, we've done the pilots, as you know, with Lyft in the Carolinas for hurricane response, and we were able to do some great stuff there. And, you know, it's all just coming together. But insurance was the pivot. I mean, it was the pivot.
Yeah, and in all honesty, you know, I think insurance was the right pivot, right? You know, especially during this time now where we're seeing a lot, and I mean a lot, around insurtech and transformation, and with insurance companies being open to engaging with vendors and other organizations that are looking to enable different parts of their value chain to create the efficiencies or new business model innovations. You know, so I could see why, as you pivoted to the insurance space, that you got sort of a lot of value, and that you all have seen a significant amount of growth over time in this space. Now, you know, I want to ask you a question, if you don't mind. You know, I want to talk a little bit about your background and sort of the struggles that you had as you were trying to delve into this insurance space. Now, you know, as you've grown and as you've grown the capability, you know, what is it that you've done that made insurance organizations and insurance companies want to work with you despite your background? You know, because from my perspective, I see the value that Drop-In provides as significant for this industry, especially when you think about the effectiveness around claims and estimates of damages all across the board in a cat situation. So, you know, what was it specifically about your product that these organizations recognize that, hey, by not working with you, they're really going to miss out?
Well, I think it's a great question, and I've had a lot of conversations with people who've actually become our partners or customers afterward, and they said, you know, once I met you and then I looked into you a little further, I realized that you had, I got a good feeling from you, and second, I realized that you understood this in a way that other tech people didn't, and quite frankly, I understood that as a tech company, you have an idea and you start with nothing and your processes and your customers are developed and the customers that you get are attracted to whatever this idea is you're doing. And that's great, but you can't just dump that on 100 million existing insurance customers. And insurance companies are very sensitive to that because tech people are constantly like, well, here's the efficiency, here's the ROI. Here's this, here's that, you know, I mean, it doesn't make any sense. So many tech companies are frustrated, you know, that insurance companies don't move faster or don't absorb faster, but it's because they're not speaking the right language. And to me, actually, everybody that we do business with, that's something that they have in common. They were like, okay, you understood that. While at the same time, you know, what my value prop is, hey, I know you want to use all that AI. I know those numbers tell you that. I know that you know that it's super efficient and that's the future. I also understand that you have existing customers that you can't just drop this on, right? So I'm offering you a bridge. You don't want to use your AI to identify bad actors because whenever you profile any group, you have collateral damage. They don't want to disturb their good actors. They want to pay those good actors' claims as quickly as possible because retention is becoming so much more important, right? Now, we allow those customers, rather than being AI and predictive, we allow them to self-select. If at the intake call center, at the time of first notice of loss, a good actor is actually calling for help, why are you turning them into a phone number and hanging up a claim number and hanging up the phone on them? I go, they're calling for help. Offer them, hey, let me see. Can I send you a text? Let me see what you see. Oh, it's an older person. They have a technology adoption resistance. No problem. Let me, what time will you be home? 3 o'clock. I can have, you know, a crowdsourced resource there by 3 o'clock who can do this for me. Now, what good actor have you ever come across in a claims process that doesn't take an opportunity to have their claim potentially fixed or at least started to be settled faster at no additional cost to them, especially when they're in the crisis moment?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, just thinking about, you know, what you mentioned there in regards to not touching their portfolio of business initially, especially, you know, if they have to ensure that they're servicing them, you know, that's really a core part of the innovator's dilemma, you know, where, you know, they want to ensure that they can innovate without having to impact the rest of their business and the rest of their portfolio. And I think for insurance companies, that becomes, you know, pretty challenging. Especially, you know, as they're looking to truly innovate their value chain, but, you know, they don't really have the technical subject matter expertise and capabilities to do it themselves. And for me, that's part of the reason why, you know, organizations need to engage with companies like yours and other insurtechs to help bring that subject matter expertise in-house. You know, to the example that you mentioned, it really is all about changing the customer experience because to your point, customers will be looking for ways to really streamline and enhance the process to adjust that claim in order to get back up to speed and run their business or get their homes fixed much more quickly. You know, so I look at the capability that you all are providing with Drop-In and I can truly see the value as to what's occurring there. Now, you know, with that said, you know, I also see the potential for other types of technologies to pair with what you're doing, like Vision Analytics, which could potentially help help to adjust claims. So, you know, at the point of, you know, your future, you know, are you, first of all, are you all currently using other technologies in coordination with what you're providing with Drop-In? And do you have a thought around what the future is going to look like in potentially pairing the few?
Well, we do. We have a partner in, it's called the Planner app, PLNAR. It's developed by Smart Picture Technologies. Andy Graf is their CEO. So if a carrier during the live stream, either with the insured or with the third-party resource that's on scene live, if afterward they need measurements or a model of the room, they're able to send an in-app notification to that drop operator who's on scene and notify them what they want measured. And afterward, that notification, when clicked on, will take them to the Planner app. They'll simply do a 360 around the room after they calibrate it to the floor. And then that'll be uploaded to our system, and a 3D model will be generated that's been tested to about 97.5% accuracy.
I think that's awesome, and I think that's a part of the way that you've been driving innovation for your organization. Now, you know, you mentioned a little bit earlier, not having to be relying upon connectivity, right? So I want to talk a little bit about specifically how that works. So I could assume that the policyholders or whoever is doing this, if you send an adjuster or someone out to take the video, that they're going to take it, and then when they get connected, then that information will be uploaded. You know, how does that technology work, and what's the benefit that you're going to see come from this?
Yeah, well, that's actually not how we're going to do it. We're going to have a live feed, and in fact, we've been doing them from Malibu already. We have for the, you know, in catastrophe response, connectivity is always the issue. In any normal case, that's not the case. So normally Drop-In works on connectivity like anything else, but in a cat response, we have now our drop operator catastrophe response team that is fully satellite enabled and is able to deploy anywhere in the world within 48 hours. These are all licensed drone pilots. And for our enterprise customers, they're available. And because they're satellite enabled, we're able to grid, any kind of geography in with 1.5 square mile radius of coverage. So if you imagine you're dragging 1.5 square miles in any shape you want across any grid you want. We actually did the first test on it today, and I was surprised it came out of the shop a week early, and it is fantastic, and we were able to maintain less than 1 second latency.
Wow, you know, that's, I think that's fairly significant, you know, to the point that you made, especially as you start to get into the middle of these hurricane zones, is what I'll call it, you know, after the damage occurs. There's a lot of challenges around connectivity, but it sounds like you all have really gotten over some of those challenges. Now, when you build this, are you engaged with other carriers or organizations that pilot your capabilities?
Well, we have a couple customers, and, you know, we're Lloyd's has made their syndicate. I mean, syndicate is how they call it in the United Kingdom, not to be mistaken with any negative connotation word. They've made it available, you know, and approved us as a vendor to, and they're actually, you know, pushing this kind of, they're actually biz devving for us. That's the best way to put it. So, I mean, we're in a pretty good position there where we have a lot of motivated eyes and ears to see that. And it was really exciting today because what we did, the way we tested is we were able to show some people who were displaced their homes, you know, and a couple of times it was heartbreaking. They saw their home burnt out, but a couple times, you know, to see the relief on people's faces when their home was missed. I mean, it was a crazy day, but overall it was just, we were really happy with it. And it was really great to be able to bring a smile to some people's eyes who otherwise didn't have much to smile about the last couple of days.
Yeah. You know, over the last couple of years, you're absolutely right. You know, we've seen a lot of challenges with people out west that were faced with a lot of the brush fires and the wildfires that hit their homes. It sounds like, to the point that you made, you know, you all are already using your technology to help in the efforts there. How's that being perceived from the industry?
Well, you know what's funny is the carriers, when we talk to them, and the TPAs who actually manage most of the claims when there's cat events, right? We all know that the trucks aren't there really processing claims. They're there, you know, serving coffee and phones and comforting people. They're shocked that we're able to be there. It's the same response that we had with Lyft in the Carolinas, that we were back online, you know, and flying drones 12 hours after the eye passed and we had connectivity. And, you know, same thing here. They're still kind of like, well, can you send us what you got? I was like, well, why don't you just tell me what you want? They're not prepared to deal, to be able to have eyes and ears on things this quickly. So it's still being absorbed. Although our existing customers are real happy.
I could see, I could see that it's being absorbed and that the existing customers will definitely be happy about, you know, what you're doing. But hey, I actually want to talk a little bit about the Lyft pilot or the Lyft partnership that's in place. So, you know, if you don't mind, Louis, you know, let's pivot to that and let's talk a little bit about how that's working. And how you all are engaging with Lyft. So I know you mentioned that, you know, during the challenges that you were facing out in the Carolinas, you sort of launched the pilot and done some things there. But if you don't mind, let's talk about that specifically and where that partnership is going.
Well, we're, you know, Lyft is the only one who can comment about Lyft, but I can say this, that Drop-In has been fortunate enough to pilot several cities with Lyft in an initiative where we would be using their driver partners as task people to do drop-in tasks. They'd become drop operators once the ride ended. Now, Lyft is, what I can say is that I can tell you that they are very concerned. Well, not concerned, but they're very anxious to continue to find work for their driver partners. And they are examining this in several areas, not just with me, because they really do feel connected to them in a way that shocked me from seeing how people respond at an executive level, usually once you start having conversations with them about the workforce. But Lyft is a different category. They're really concerned about them and want to make sure that they continue to, you know, have opportunities to make money at their leisure. But same thing when we got there to the Carolinas, right? We got there to the Carolinas and, you know, we told some people we were going to be there and the carriers were like, okay, cool. Yeah, we will, you know, even a couple of them had set up paid proof of concepts. To do there. And when we got there and we like called them and they were like, okay, well, when are you guys going to get started? And I was like, well, we already got all your inspection report because they'd given us a list. Right. And that's the interesting thing in this situation, not just in cat events, but when you're offering to help a customer, a good actor who's calling for help, the other thing that you're doing is besides allowing them to self-identify, right, which is better than any predictive situation, you've created a leftover group who didn't self-identify that you can use that stuff on, right? It's a perfect bridge because you're also at the same time behind the scenes creating a stop loss. You're preventing leakage.
Yeah, and you know, from a carrier perspective, right? The preventative of leakage, of course, is something that a lot of carriers focus on, especially as they start to look at the extensiveness of claims after an event. And to your point, not even during hurricane events, but any type of event. I look at what you do and I really see that you all become an extension of the carrier. You know, I just thought about the point that you made around the timing that it took, when they said, you know, when are you going to start? It's already happened. And what that really shows is that for the policyholders that you're engaged with during this process, that the service and the expectation that those policyholders had of the carrier has been elevated because of the type of service that you all produced. Now, you know, is that the way that you look at yourselves in regards to how you engage with these customers?
Yeah, well, we look at it like, hey, we're a platform, and you can use it any way you want in any place you want. But hey, like, the funny thing about the story I told you, the carrier that called to ask where we're going to start, they didn't realize we don't do the inspections for them, right? Like, we're there in support if there's whatever. You know, we actually had someone at their call center, but they'd installed a license adjuster at their call center, and he'd run them and ordered the video streams and had gotten the inspections. It was all in their dashboard already, and the carrier's operations didn't even realize that they'd already done them themselves. They just, that made it, that was even funnier. Yeah, so it's, you know, and that's really what it comes down to, and that's fine. I don't, you know, listen, I have, we are what we are. I have an investor who, when I first met him, he let me pitch him, and then he turned to me at lunch and he said, you know, I have a 14-year-old daughter, and, you know, I'm not giving you a nickel, because if somebody did something like what, you know, if somebody gave her drugs, I'd kill them. And I said, you know, he said, what do you have to say about that? And I said, you know, I can't say anything about that, because I'd be lying to you if I told you that I understood the ramifications of all the bad things that I've done. It's impossible to calculate the ripple effect. And so I don't think that I can make up for that. All I can do is be, you know, better going forward, and be conscious of that, and make sure to have a good effect on people rather than a negative one. And he said, you know, he ended up investing. He was like, that was one of the most honest answers I've ever gotten from someone. And it was the last thing I expected from someone like you. And it's kind of, you know, that's kind of how it is. Once people see what we do and they put their hands on it and realize it's not a pitch deck and we don't need you to invest $1 million for us to customize this for you, and it's available for however you want to use it, and the existence of pictures and video can either be, you know, when the call center does it, right, guess what? You're not retraining your adjusters. They're not doing anything different, or anybody else. There's just, now there's live pictures and video. There's a platform if you want another set of them. And either you use that data or you don't at every step of the value chain. But it also created a stop loss. And this is an interesting thing in carriers, and I just learned this, like, there's a conflict of interest. So it's great for the CFO, like, okay, bottom line of the company is going to be better. We're going to have a lower average claim payout. We have numbers to show that. But the claims department is bonus based on how efficiently, cost-wise, they handle claims. And they don't want to add $5 or $150 or $1,000 to the front end of every claim to handle this at a call center, because they don't get bonus on whether the company makes money or not. They get bonus based on what their department does in some cases. Is that, I mean, that's what you're dealing with sometimes.
No, absolutely. You know, I, to your point, that's absolutely a conflict, because on the carrier side and on the leadership side within that carrier, they're looking really to reduce the amount of cost that's associated with some of these claims. So as you know, clearly that the sooner you can get to reviewing and adjusting, the more likely that you can stem the tides when it comes to the amount of loss that that potential claim is going to produce. You know, so the capability allows for that early review, and to your point, the stop loss that comes along with leveraging that potential or that capability in the technology. Now you did mention something around the data that's being collected, and I want to dig a little bit into that. You know, so I could potentially see that with all of the different data points and all of the things that you all are collecting, that on the aggregate, that could be of significant value to carriers, MGAs, agencies, and so on, you know, as they start to delve into what that data may tell them about the aftermath of a potential event. Now, are you all doing anything with the amount of or the informational data that's being collected? And if so, what are you doing specifically to apply that to the insurance value chain?
Well, here's the thing, is because we have two existing carriers who are continuing customers. They identified that immediately, and they said, until we're going to have some kind of comprehensive data sharing, collecting, whatever thing, because they're the ones that pay for it. It's enterprise, right? I'm not giving them a free service and using data as their payment. It's all theirs. My hands are kind of tied, you know, especially with liability, encryption, and data security requirements. And I don't want to create, you know, I'm a startup CEO. I don't want to create any hurdles. So when their lawyers say their data is their data and I don't do anything with it until we come to some kind of future agreement, I just say, here, where do I sign? I mean, that's just the bottom line of it. To me, it's 100% theirs. It's treated like Fort Knox. It's, you know, it's theirs.
Yeah, I could see that. You know, I do know that there's a lot of companies out there that leverages that data and anonymizes the information to use it in other parts of the process. But to the point that you made, it is technically the company's data, you know, so, you know, there's always that level of protection that you want to provide. So, hey, you know, if we could talk a little bit about the sort of the value about what you're getting out of the Lloyds partnership. So you mentioned that you all are a part of the Lloyds Lab program. And, you know, number one, if you don't mind talking specifically about when you got in and what it is, and then also, you know, what that's doing to help drive growth within your company.
Well, Lloyds, about a year ago, you know, they said, hey, we're going to have an innovation lab, and we signed up. And we were just thinking another innovation lab. But again, it's a difference in vocabulary on the other side of the Atlantic, just like syndicate has a negative connotation here, but is actually how Lloyds terms its environment. It's properly called the Lloyds Syndicate. Same thing. Had they known that lab would be taken as just another insurance innovation lab, which, you know, if you're in the tech side of this anyway, you know that innovation labs are basically people that get paid to talk to people and not really much happens from there. Not that it's always like that, but that's a safe bet. It's been exactly the opposite. They picked 10 companies to create digitized processes to fit within their core systems. And that's where we came up with the value prop of like, hey, this is a call center situation. You have a three-way if you need to loop in an on-call adjuster because you need a licensed adjuster to make a call because the call center sees something that they think somebody should see, or police or fire or whatever, you can actually loop these people in immediately and they would also see the video stream. Well, then the data just exists. Nobody had to change their job description within the company. The good actor who's reaching out for help was helped in a way that they've never been helped before. Let me try and help you right now, not turn you into a number and call you back. The stop loss was created to address the leakage issue for all the people who don't opt in, who are actually have identified themselves as bad actors for the purposes of insurance. Because if somebody doesn't want their claim settled today or at least faster, then they're probably a high percentage of bad actors in that demographic. And you have that demographic now left over to run your AI and all the other new processes that you want to run and things you want to try, because you've protected your good actors and your high retention rate. And that was something we were able to develop with Lloyds, because they showed us core systems. They had their underwriters and their reinsurers do the same. They kind of really, really, really pushed a different kind of entry that I haven't seen from any kind of innovation lab on this side of the Atlantic.
Yeah. So Lewis, you know, you mentioned that even in your background, while your specific history wasn't insurance, you know, drove the growth of this organization, that you started to, and it sounds like your organization started to bring on board a lot of the insurance subject matter expertise. Now, you know, I always like to ask, you know, when you're a person that's starting an organization without the insurance subject matter expertise, are you finding that not being trained in this industry has helped you to look at things differently and innovate in ways that a traditionalist may not have been able to?
Yes, but also the inverse is true, in that it's allowed me to look at things as the way they are, not the way I wish they were, which is, I think, sometimes where the miscommunication between old, you know, tech companies and older world companies. I mean, people don't realize this isn't a situation like Amazon or Google, where if there was no tech, they didn't exist. Insurance companies were making money. See, you know, they were factors. They've been around for centuries. They were making money long before calculator existed. They're not technology enabled, and they have a business model of shared risk that allows them to make profit with zero technology still. In fact, Lloyd still has manual written entries into a book. So in order to bridge that gap, you need to be able to see both sides. You need to be able to see things a little bit differently, but you also need to see, like I always tell when I talk to kids, I tell them, listen, everybody says it's great to know where you want to go, but until you can look honestly and admit where you really are, knowing where you want to go on a map isn't going to get you anywhere if you don't know where you're starting from. And if you're lying to yourself about where you're starting from, then it's just as worthless.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so hey, Lewis, you know, thinking about the future of drop-in, you know, what do you see the industry looking like, and how drop-in is going to interplay with that in the next couple of years?
Well, you know, as long as the penetration we're getting continues, then I believe we'll be a core system. We're a bridge. We're not some novel technology, but we're something that's easy to install in a core process. And I mean, I shouldn't have said core system, but in a core process, and easy to uninstall as well. And so there's no real opportunity cost, and the value upside far outweighs, you know, anything else. And it's so simple to use, and it just has so much value, like we said, at every step of the way.
Yeah, absolutely. So hey, you know, one of the questions that I always like to ask, right, just because, you know, this is about innovation, and we really like to make it tangible for those that are listening to us speak, you know, if there's a piece of advice, you know, going back into your history, going back into starting and growing this startup, you know, if there's a piece of advice that you can give the listeners of this podcast to do something tangible and take this back to their organizations to change the status quo, you know, what advice would you give them?
You know, it's the same advice that I would give kids, and you'll have to think about it for a second, but it applies to business even more. Do not acquire things in a manner that precludes you from enjoying them.
So, Lewis, I do want to say thank you for taking an opportunity to talk to me about drop-in and about, you know, what you all are doing, your history, of course, and then the value proposition of your organization. You know, if anyone wanted to learn more about your product, your company, or yourself, you know, what's the best way for them to do that?
www.dropininc.com. And one last thing, because we're going to come back and we're going to talk about this one next year, so I'll give you a little hint, Abel, if you don't mind. If you think about this right now, today, as we speak, Drop-In is capable of putting more people with cameras capable of broadcast through the Drop-In platform faster and cheaper than every news organization in the world combined.
So I'm assuming that's a hint for a new product that you're going to launch in the year.
Well, core technology is core technology. That's what we do. But no, Drop-In itself right now. If you think about it right now, currently today, we have different deals in place that cover a large part of the world where a carrier can literally enter an address and have somebody there, either with a camera phone live streaming to them or a drone, within 90 minutes and less in most cases. I mean, our SLA in the US is, you know, 90 minutes or less for our enterprise customers to 96% of the population.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. And that speed, of course, as we mentioned a little bit earlier, is really what's going to get the sort of change the expectation of the customer, and potentially, to your point, stem the potential of loss to continue significantly. So no, I'm very impressed, by the way, of number one, what you've done and how you've grown this organization. I do truly appreciate, talking to you about that. And hopefully within, you know, 6 to 9 months time, we'll get an opportunity to bring you back and talk through this new value proposition that you all laid out based on this platform that you designed.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. You know, I mean, it's, It is what it is. You know, I really meant what I said. We can only recognize what we are and hope to be better tomorrow. And, or at least that's what I can do. I mean, so I'm constantly analyzing my thought process. It's like one of the reasons, like, you know, we did what we did today. I could have charged those people for, I mean, their Malibu multi-million dollar homes, thousands of dollars to see their house right now. We don't do that. We try and bring something good. And Drop-In's motto actually is the opportunity to improve the bottom line and customer service at the same time is so rare that those have been the verticals that we've chosen to chase with Drop-In. That's the question we ask first, because there's so many ideas. We say, is this going to help the customer and the bottom line? And if it doesn't, then we don't push, we don't pursue that vertical.
Thanks for listening to my conversation with Louis Ziskin from Drop-In. You know, I got to say, this was one of my favorite conversations that I've had recently, really, to hear his story and how he transformed himself and an organization that's coming out in the forefront of innovating this space in the insurance industry. So, Louis, I do appreciate having the opportunity to talk to you. And for those of you listening, thank you. Happy holidays, and I'll see you next week.